Now, there are more than 60,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia who do have a disability. And unfortunately, they are a lot more likely to experience a lot of disadvantages socially, socioeconomically, and in terms of physical and mental well-being. But at the moment, the NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, isn't necessarily giving the right kind of help, especially when it comes to the people who struggle with basic survival needs like having shelter and food. Joining us in the studio is Scott Avery. He is the Research and Policy Director at the First Peoples Disability Network of Australia and here to have a bit more of a chat with us this morning. Scott, good morning.
Good morning and thanks for having us. Good morning, listeners.
Thanks for coming in. So to start with a big question, why is it harder for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to access services through the NDIS?
Well, there's these two things when you're Aboriginal and you have a disability. It's kind of like having a double disadvantage. So a lot of the programs that are set up to help either Aboriginal people and disability don't recognise the other part of their identity. So often these people fall into the too hard basket. So what we've seen through our research, as some examples that we've had, is to establish some of the sort of the basic infrastructure that we might take for granted. So housing, footpaths, those kind of things. Often when you go to remote communities, those kind of things aren't in place. So when the National Disability Insurance Scheme comes in and tries to provide services to a person and they don't have that public infrastructure, it just doesn't work. And as it stands now, those two parts of the support system aren't talking to each other, they aren't coordinated. So as it means, it's they're left out in the cold.
So of the 60,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia who do have a disability, how many, I guess, are really benefiting from the NDIS?
Well, some do. I should point that out. So what happens is a person actually goes and they would speak with the National Disability Insurance Scheme and they would get what's called a plan. So they would get a personalised support system. So if they need, speech pathology or those kind of things that help them to support their disability, they can get access to that. But what happens is if you go out to some places and they don't access it, and it could be, for example, there's one remote area we went to, and it's three streets out, is kind of cobbled. There's no footpaths. So we were speaking to people with wheelchairs. The NDIS centres in town, and they said, well, we don't go into town. If we keep going backwards, forwards in town, our wheelchairs break. So we don't go to them, they don't go to us. So there's these sort of access barriers. Some of it's actually cultural as well. So a lot of Aboriginal people don't identify with their disability. So when their disability scheme comes out and said, tell us about your disability, you go, oh, I don't have a disability. There might be profoundly deaf, or they might have a mobility impairment. They just said, oh, he's a bit of hard of hearing, or he has a bit of trouble getting around. So there's some social things that are stopping people accessing the scheme, but there's also cultural differences. If you're Aboriginal, we talk about disability in a different way to how the NDIS talks about disability.
And you have spoken to a lot of people in your research. I imagine that the story, like people not being able to break their wheelchair by going into town, you probably heard a lot of stories like that.
Yeah, so I ended up speaking to 47 Aboriginal people with disability and Torres Strait Islander people with disability. And it's the first time that, you know, I was talking to these people, they were saying this is the first time that anyone's actually come and asked us and talked with us. And I heard lots of stories. And it wasn't just about accessing disability supports. It was around education. It was around transport. It was around housing. It was a lot around health as well. So a lot of people were telling me that they weren't getting access to health systems, and that was actually creating a disability.
And so how do we go about, you know, we speak about closing the gap in a lot of areas, but how do we even begin to try and close the gap in this area?
I think it needs to start with closing the gap, acknowledging disability. It doesn't do that at this stage. So whether it's an education indicator, a health indicator, there's no justice indicator in closing the gap. So a lot of these agencies that are responsible for providing the sort of social infrastructure, they need to start acknowledging disability. It needs to happen with community. So you go to one place, their needs will be different to another place. So there needs to be greater constructive engagement and working together. And it needs to be a big plan. because none of these things aren't going to happen in 2 or 3 years. We actually need a big commitment for this to happen. And on the other side, we need the National Disability Insurance Scheme to acknowledge that there are certain things that need to be in place in some of these, particularly Aboriginal communities, for it to actually work. A market-based scheme, which is what the NDIS, won't work unless there's conditions which allow that market to work, and you need footpaths and you need access. Those things need to be put in place. So that's where it starts. And at the moment, I think the community is that glue. We do have that foot in both camps, and we are. If we can actually get the system, parts of the system, to actually take expert advice from community more, very grounded advice, then we think that there'll be better outcomes.
And just before I let you go, Scott, I know you've been doing a lot of research in this area. Could you tell us a bit about some of the research you've been doing and some of the findings you've made?
Yeah, so the research I've been doing, it's been over a 2-year program that I've been doing, and we've just released a book. It's called Cultural Inclusion, and it's the first time that we've known a community organisation. So the organisation on which is the First Peoples Disability Network, that the research has actually come from the community. And we've worked, normally how it would happen is universities would come to us and we advise them. We turn that round. So the universities and the academics working with advising us. So we've just published a book on that. And what it shows is that if you are Aboriginal and you are disability, the inequality you face is much higher than even if you were Aboriginal without disability or a person with disability who's not Aboriginal. The one exception that we found, and this is why we called it Cultural Inclusion, is Aboriginal people with disability participate in their own community and cultural events at the same rate as other people in their community.
Oh, wow.
So it really points as a culture, our Aboriginal Indigenous culture, is a strength upon which we can actually build an inclusive process around disability.
Well, Scott, we'll get the link up in the podcast. Really appreciate you coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
That was Scott Avery. He's the Research and Policy Director at the First Peoples Disability Network of Australia, chatting with us this morning about the struggles of Indigenous Australians with disability when it does come to getting some access to NDIS benefits. As I said, we'll get all the links for you up in the podcast. You can find that at 2SER.com.